night? Jace stepped into the center of the bullseye and looked up at her. He was wearing fighting gear, not training clothes like Clary was, and his fair hair stood out startlingly against the black. It had darkened slightly since the end of summer and was more a dark gold than light, which Clary thought suited him even better. It made her absurdly happy that she had now known him long enough to notice small changes in his appearance. "I thought you were coming up here," she called down. "Change of plans?" "Long story." He grinned up at her. "So, you want to practice flips?" Clary sighed. Practicing flips involved flinging herself off the beam into empty space and using the flexible cord to hold her while she pushed off the walls and flipped herself over and under, teaching herself to whirl, kick, and duck without worrying about hard floors and bruises. She'd seen Jace do it, and he looked like a falling angel while he did, flying through the air, whirling and spinning with beautiful balletic grace. She, on the other hand, curled up like a potato bug as soon as the floor approached, and the fact that she intellectually knew she wasn't going to hit it didn't seem to make any difference. She was starting to wonder if it didn't matter that she'd been born a shadow hunter. Maybe it was too late for her to be made into one, or at least a fully functional one. Or maybe the gift that had made her and Jace what they were had been somehow distributed unequally between them. So he had gotten all the physical grace, and she had gotten, well, not a lot of it. "Come on, Clary," Jace said. "Jump." She closed her eyes and jumped. For a moment, she felt herself hang suspended, free of everything. Then gravity took over, and she plunged toward the floor. Instinctively, she pulled her arms and legs in, keeping her eyes squeezed shut. The cord pulled taut, and she rebounded, flying back up before falling again. As her velocity slowed, she opened her eyes and found herself dangling at the end of the cord, about 5 feet above Jace. He was grinning. "Nice," he said, "as graceful as a falling snowflake." "Was I screaming?" she asked, genuinely curious. "You know, on the way down." He nodded. "Thankfully, no one's home, or they would have assumed I was murdering you." "Huh, you can't even reach me." She kicked out a leg and spun lazily in midair. Jace's eyes glinted. "Want to bet?" Clary knew that expression. "No," she said quickly. "Whatever you're going to do." But he'd already done it. When Jace moved fast, his individual movements were almost invisible. She saw his hand go to his belt, and then something flashed into the air. She heard the sound of parting fabric as the cord above her head was sheared through. Released, she fell freely, too surprised to scream, directly into Jace's arms. The force knocked him backward, and they sprawled together onto one of the padded floor mats, Clary on top of him. He grinned up at her. "Now," he said, "that was much better. You didn't scream at all." "I didn't get the chance." She was breathless, and not just from the impact of the fall. Being sprawled on top of Jace, feeling his body against hers, made her hand shake and her heart beat faster. She had thought maybe her physical reaction to him, their reactions to each other, would fade with familiarity, but that hadn't happened. If anything, it had gotten worse the more time she'd spent with him. Or better, she supposed, depending on how you thought about it. He was looking up at her with dark golden eyes. She wondered if their color had intensified since his encounter with Raziel, the angel, by the shores of Lake Lynn and Idris. She couldn't ask anyone, though everyone knew that Valentine had summoned the angel and that the angel had healed Jace from injuries Valentine had inflicted on him. No one but Clary and Jace knew that Valentine had done more than just injure his adopted son. He had stabbed Jace through the heart as part of the summoning ceremony, stabbed him, and held him while he died. At Clary's wish, Raziel had brought Jace back from death. The enormity of it still shocked Clary, and she suspected Jace as well. They had agreed never to tell anyone that Jace had actually died, even for a brief time. It was their secret. He reached up and pushed her hair back from her face. "I'm joking," he said. "You're not so bad. You'll get there. You should have seen Alec do flips at first. I think he kicked himself in the head once." "Sure," said Clary, "but he was probably 11. She eyed him. "I suppose you've always been amazing at this stuff." "I was born amazing." He stroked her cheek with the tips of his fingers, lightly, but enough to make her shiver. She said nothing. He was joking, but in a sense, it was true. Jace had been born to be what he was. "How long can you stay tonight?" She smiled a little. "Are we done with training?" "I'd like to think that we're done with the part of the evening where it's absolutely required. Although, there are a few things I'd like to practice." He reached up to pull her down, but at that moment, the door opened, and Isabel came stalking in, the high heels of her boots clicking on the polished hardwood floor. Catching sight of Jace and Clary sprawled on the floor, she raised her eyebrows. "Canoodling, I see. I thought you were supposed to be training." "No one said you had to walk in without knocking, Iz." Jace didn't move, just turned his head to the side to look at Isabel with a mixture of annoyance and affection. Clary, though, scrambled to her feet, straightening her crumpled clothes. "It's the training room. It's public space." Isabel was pulling off one of her gloves, which were bright red velvet. "I just got these at Trash and Vaudeville. On sale. Don't you love them? Don't you wish you had a pair?" She wiggled her fingers in their direction. "I don't know," said Jace. "I think they'd clash with my gear." Isabel made a face at him. "Did you hear about the dead shadow hunter they found in Brooklyn? The body was all mangled up, so they don't know who it is yet. I assume that's where Mom went." "Yeah," said Jace, sitting up. "Clave meeting. I ran into her on the way out." "You didn't tell me that," said Clary. "Is that why you took so long getting rope?" He nodded. "Sorry, I didn't want to freak you out." "He means," said Isabel, "he didn't want to spoil the romantic mood." She bit her lip. "I just hope it wasn't anyone we know." "I don't think it could have been. The body was dumped in an abandoned factory. Had been there for several days. If it had been someone we knew, we would have noticed they were missing." Jace pushed his hair back behind his ears. He was looking at Isabel a little impatiently, Clary thought, as if he were annoyed she'd brought this up. She wished he'd told her earlier, even if it would have spoiled the mood. Much of what he did, what they all did, Clary knew, brought them into frequent contact with the reality of death. All the Lightwoods were, in their own ways, still grieving the loss of the youngest son, Max, who had died simply for being in the wrong place at the wrong time. It was strange. Jace had accepted her decision to leave high school and take up training without a murmur, but he shied away from discussing the dangers of a shadow-hunting life with her. "I'm going to get dressed," she announced, and headed for the door that led to the small changing room attached to the training area. It was very plain, pale wood walls, a mirror, a shower, and hooks for clothes. Towels were stacked neatly on a wooden bench by the door. Clary showered quickly and put on her street clothes, tights, boots, jean skirt, and a new pink sweater. Looking at herself in the mirror, she saw that there was a hole in her tights, and her damp and curling red hair was an untidy tangle. She would never look perfectly put together like Isabel always did, but Jace didn't seem to mind. By the time she came back to the training room, Isabel and Jace had left the topic of dead shadow hunters behind and had moved on to something Jace apparently found even more horrifying, Isabel's date with Simon. "I can't believe he took you to an actual restaurant." Jace was on his feet now, putting away the floor mats and training gear while Isabel leaned against the wall and played with her new gloves. I assumed his idea of a date would be making you watch him play World of Warcraft with his nerd friends. I, Clary pointed out, am one of his nerd friends, thank you. Jace grinned at her. It wasn't really a restaurant, more of a diner, with pink soup that he wanted me to try, Isabel said thoughtfully. He was very sweet. Clary felt instantly guilty for not telling her, or Jace, about Maya. He said you had fun. Isabel's gaze flickered over to her. There was a peculiar quality to Isabel's expression, as if she were hiding something, but it was gone before Clary could be sure it had been there at all. You talked to him? Yeah, he called me a few minutes ago, just to check in. Clary shrugged. I see, Isabel said, her voice suddenly brisk and cool. Well, as I said, he's very sweet, but maybe a bit too sweet. That can be boring. She stuffed her gloves into her pockets. Anyway, it isn't a permanent thing. It's just playing around for now. Clary's guilt faded. Have you guys ever talked about, you know, dating exclusively? Isabel looked horrified. Of course not. She yawned then, stretching her arms cat-like over her head. Okay, off to bed. See you later, lovebirds. She departed, leaving a hazy cloud of jasmine perfume in her wake. Jace looked over at Clary. He had started unbuckling his gear, which clasped at the wrists and back, forming a protective shell over his clothes. I suppose you have to go home? She nodded reluctantly. Getting her mother to agree to let her pursue Shadow Hunter training had been a long, unpleasant argument in the first place. Jocelyn had dug her heels in, saying that she'd spent her life trying to keep Clary out of the Shadow Hunter culture, which she saw as dangerous. Not just violent, she argued, but isolationist and cruel. Only a year ago, she pointed out to Clary, Clary's decision to be trained as a Shadow Hunter would have meant she could never speak to her mother again. Clary argued back that the fact that the Clave had suspended rules like that while the new council reviewed the laws meant that the Clave had changed since Jocelyn had been a girl. And anyway, Clary needed to know how to defend herself. I hope this isn't just because of Jace, Jocelyn had said finally. I know how it is when you're in love with someone. You want to be where they are and do what they do. But Clary... I am not you, Clary had said, struggling to control her anger. The Shadow Hunters aren't the Circle, and Jace isn't Valentine. I didn't say anything about Valentine. It's what you were thinking, Clary had said. Maybe Valentine brought Jace up, but Jace isn't anything like him. Well, I hope not, Jocelyn had said softly, for all our sakes. Eventually, she had given in, but with some rules. Clary wasn't to live in the Institute, but with her mother at Luke's. Jocelyn got weekly progress reports from Maris to assure her that Clary was learning and not just, Clary supposed, ogling Jace all day, or whatever she was worried about, and Clary wasn't to spend the night at the Institute. Ever. No sleepovers where your boyfriend lives, Jocelyn had said firmly. I don't care if it is the Institute. No. Boyfriend. It was still a shock, hearing the word. For so long it had seemed a total impossibility that Jace would ever be her boyfriend, that they could ever be anything to each other at all but brother and sister, and that had been too hard and horrible to face. Never seeing each other again, they had decided, would have been better than that, and that would have been like dying. And then, by a miracle, they had been set free. Now it had been 6 weeks, but Clary wasn't tired of the word yet. I have to get home, she said. It's almost 11, and my mom freaks if I stay here past 10. All right. Jace dropped his gear, or at least the top half of it, onto the bench. He wore a thin t-shirt underneath. Clary could see his marks through it, like ink bleeding through wet paper. I'll walk you out. The Institute was quiet as they passed through. There were no visiting shadow hunters from other cities staying right now. Robert, Isabel and Alec's father, was in Idris, helping set up the new council, and with Hodge and Max gone forever, and Alec away with Magnus, Clary felt as if the remaining occupants were like guests in a mostly empty hotel. She wished other members of the conclave would come around more often, but she supposed everyone was giving the Lightwoods time at the moment. Time to remember Max, and time to forget. "So, have you heard from Alec and Magnus lately?" she asked. "Are they having a good time?" "Sounds like it." Jace took his phone out of his pocket and handed it to her. "Alec keeps sending me annoying photos. Lots of captions like, 'Wish you were here, except not really.'" "Well, you can't blame him. It's supposed to be a romantic vacation." She flipped through the photos on Jace's phone and giggled. Alec and Magnus standing in front of the Eiffel Tower, Alec wearing jeans as usual, and Magnus wearing a striped fisherman's sweater, leather pants, and an insane beret. In the Boboli Gardens, Alec was still wearing jeans, and Magnus was wearing an enormous Venetian cloak and a gondolier's hat. He looked like the Phantom of the Opera. In front of the Prado, he was wearing a sparkling matador jacket and platform boots, while Alec appeared to be calmly feeding a pigeon in the background. "I'm taking that away from you before you get to the India part," said Jace, retrieving his phone. "Magnus and Asari, some things you don't ever forget." Clary laughed. They had already reached the elevator, which opened its rattling gate when Jace pushed the call button. She stepped inside, and Jace followed her. The moment the elevator started down, Clary didn't think she'd ever get used to the initial heart-stopping lurch as it began its descent. He moved toward Clary in the dimness and drew her close. She put her hands against his chest, feeling the hard muscles under his t-shirt, the beat of his heart beneath them. In the shadowy light, his eyes shone. "I'm sorry I can't stay," she whispered. "Don't be sorry." There was a ragged edge to his voice that surprised her. "Jocelyn doesn't want you to turn out like me. I don't blame her for that." "Jace," she said, a little bewildered by the bitterness in his voice, "are you all right?" Instead of answering, he kissed her, pulling her hard against him. His body pressed hers against the wall, the metal of the mirror cold against her back, his hands sliding around her waist, up under her sweater. She always loved the way he held her. Careful, but not too gentle. Not so gentle that she ever felt he was more in control than she was. Neither of them could control how they felt about each other, and she liked that. Like the way his heart hammered against hers, like the way he murmured against her mouth when she kissed him back. The elevator came to a rattling stop, and the gate opened. Beyond it, she could see the empty nave of the cathedral, light shimmering in a line of candelabras down the center aisle. She clung to Jace, glad there was very little light in the elevator so she couldn't see her own burning face in the mirror. "Maybe I can stay," she whispered. "Just a little while longer." He said nothing. She could feel the tension in him, and tensed herself. It was more than just the tension of desire. He was shaking, his whole body trembling as he buried his face in the crook of her neck. "Jace," she said. He let go of her then, suddenly, and stepped back. His cheeks were flushed, his eyes fever bright. "No," he said. "I don't want to give your mother another reason not to like me. She already thinks I'm the second coming of my father." He broke off. Before Clary could say, "Valentine wasn't your father." Jace was usually so careful to refer to Valentine Morgenstern by name, never as my father, when he mentioned Valentine at all. Usually they stayed away from the topic, and Clary had never admitted to Jace that her mother worried that he was secretly just like Valentine, knowing that even the suggestion would hurt him badly. Mostly, Clary just did everything she could to keep the two of them apart. He reached past her before she could say anything and yanked open the elevator gate. "I love you, Clary," he said without looking at her. He was staring out into the church, at the rows of lighted candles, their gold reflected in his eyes. "More than I ever," he broke off. "God, more than I probably should. You know that, don't you?" She stepped outside the elevator and turned to face him. There were a thousand things she wanted to say, but he was already looking away from her, pushing the button that would bring the elevator back up to the Institute floors. She started to protest, but the elevator was already moving, the doors closing as it rattled its way back up. They shut with a click, and she stared at them for a moment. The angel was painted on their surface, wings outspread, eyes raised. The angel was painted on everything. Her voice echoed harshly in the empty room when she spoke. "I love you too," she said.
Chapter 3, Sevenfold.
"You know what's awesome?" said Eric, setting down his drumsticks. "Having a vampire in our band. This is the thing that's really going to take us over the top."
Kirk, lowering the microphone, rolled his eyes. Eric was always talking about taking the band over the top, and so far nothing had ever actually materialized. The best they'd ever done was a gig at the knitting factory, and only 4 people had come to that. And one of them had been Simon's mom.
"I don't see how it can take us over the top if we're not allowed to tell anyone he's a vampire."
"Too bad," said Simon. He was sitting on one of the speakers next to Clary, who was engrossed in texting someone, probably Jace. "No one's going to believe you anyway, because, look, here I am, daylight." He raised his arms to indicate the sunlight pouring through the holes in the roof of Eric's garage, which was their current practice space.
"That does somewhat impact our credibility," said Matt,
pushing his bright red hair out of his eyes and squinting at Simon.
"Maybe you could wear fake fangs."
"He doesn't need fake fangs," said Clary, irritably, lowering her phone. "He has real fangs. You've seen them." That was true. Simon had to whip out the fangs when initially breaking the news to the band. At first, they thought he'd had a head injury or a mental breakdown. After he flashed the fangs at them, they'd come around. Eric had even admitted that he wasn't particularly surprised.
"I always knew there were vampires, dude," he said. "Because you know how there's people you know who, like, always look the same even when they're, like, 100 years old? Like David Bowie. That's because they're vampires."
Simon had drawn the line at telling them that Clary and Isabel were shadow hunters. That wasn't his secret to tell, nor did they know that Maya was a werewolf. They just thought that Maya and Isabel were 2 hot girls who had both inexplicably agreed to date Simon. They both put this down to what Kirk called his sexy vampire mojo. Simon didn't really care what they called it, as long as they never slipped up and told Maya and Isabel about each other. So far, he'd managed to successfully invite them each to alternate gigs, so they never showed up at the same one at the same time.
"Maybe you could show your fangs on stage," Eric suggested. "Just like once, dude. Just flash them at the crowd."
"If he did that, the leader of the New York City vampire clan would kill you all," Clary said. "You know that, right?" She shook her head in Simon's direction. "I can't believe you told him you're a vampire," she added, lowering her voice so only Simon could hear. "They're idiots, in case you haven't noticed."
"They're my friends," Simon muttered.
"They're your friends and they're idiots.
I want people I care about to know the truth about me."
"Oh," Clary said, not very kindly. "So, when are you going to tell your mother?" Before Simon could reply, there was a loud rap on the garage door, and a moment later it slid up, letting more autumn sunlight pour inside. Simon looked over, blinking. It was a reflex, really, left over from when he had been human. It no longer took his eyes more than a split second to adjust to darkness or light. There was a boy standing at the garage entrance, backlit by bright sun. He held a piece of paper in his hand. He looked down at it, uncertainly, and then back up at the band.
"Hey," he said, "is this where I can find the band Dangerous Stain?" "We're Dichotomous Lemur now," said Eric, stepping forward. "Who wants to know?"
"I'm Kyle,"
said the boy, ducking under the garage door. Straightening up, he flipped back the brown hair that fell into his eyes and held out a piece of paper to Eric.
I saw you were looking for a lead singer.
Wow, said Matt.
We put that flyer up like a year ago. I totally forgot about it.
Yeah, said Eric.
We were doing some different stuff back then. Now we mostly switch off on vocals. You have experience?
Kyle, who was very tall, Simon saw. Though not at all gangly, shrugged.
Not really, but I'm told I can sing.
He had a slow, slightly drawling diction, more surfer than southern. The members of the band looked uncertainly at one another. Eric scratched behind his ear.
Can you give us a second, dude?
Sure.
Kyle ducked back out of the garage, sliding the door closed behind him. Simon could hear him whistling faintly outside. It sounded like She'll Be Coming Round the Mountain. It wasn't particularly in tune, either.
I don't know, Eric said. I'm not sure we can use anyone new right now, because, I mean, we can't tell him about the vampire thing, can we?
No, said Simon. You can't.
Well, then, Matt shrugged. It's too bad. We need a singer. Kirk sucks. No offense, Kirk.
Screw you, said Kirk.
I don't suck. Yes, you do, said Matt. You suck big, Harry.
I think, Clary interrupted, raising her voice, that you should let him try out. Simon stared at her.
Why?
Because he's super hot, Clary said to Simon's surprise. He hadn't been enormously struck by Kyle's looks, but then perhaps he wasn't the best judge of male beauty. And your band needs some sex appeal.
Thank you, said Simon. On behalf of us all, thank you very much.
Clary made an impatient noise.
Yes, yes. You're all fine-looking guys, especially you, Simon. She patted his hand. But Kyle is hot like, whoa. I'm just saying. My objective opinion as a female is that you add Kyle to your band, you will double your female fan base.
Which means we'll have two female fans instead of one, said Kirk. Which one?
Matt looked genuinely curious.
Eric's little cousin's friend. What's her name? The one who had a crush on Simon.
She comes to all our gigs and tells everyone she's his girlfriend. Simon winced.
She's 13. That's your sexy vampire mojo at work, man, said Matt. The ladies cannot resist you.
Oh, for God's sake, said Clary. There's no such thing as sexy vampire mojo. She pointed a finger at Eric. And don't even say that Sexy Vampire Mojo sounds like a band name or all. The garage door swung back up.
Dudes. It was Kyle again. Look, if you don't want me to try out, it's cool. Maybe you change your sound, whatever. Just say the word and I'm out.
Eric cocked his head to the side.
Come on in. Let's get a look at you.
Kyle stepped into the garage. Simon stared at him, trying to gauge what it was that had made Clary say he was hot. He was tall and broad-shouldered and slim, with high cheekbones, longish black hair that tumbled over his forehead and down to his neck in curls, and brown skin that hadn't lost its summery tan yet. His long, thick eyelashes over startling hazel green eyes made him look like a pretty boy rock star. He wore a fitted green t-shirt and jeans, and twining both his bare arms were tattoos. Not marks, just ordinary tattoos. They looked like scrolling script winding around his skin, disappearing up the sleeves of his shirt. Okay, Simon had to admit. He wasn't hideous.
You know, Kirk said finally, breaking the silence, I see it. He is pretty hot.
Kyle blinked and turned to Eric.
So do you want me to sing or not?
Eric detached the mic from its stand and handed it to him.
Go ahead.
He said,
give it a try.
You know, he was really pretty good, Clary said. I was kind of kidding about including Kyle in the band, but he can actually sing. They were walking along Kent Avenue toward Luke's house. The sky had darkened from blue to gray in preparation for twilight, and clouds hung low over the East River. Clary was trailing one of her gloved hands along the chain-link fence that separated them from the cracked concrete embankment, making the metal rattle.
You're just saying that because you think he's hot, said Simon.
She dimpled.
Not that hot. Not like the hottest guy I've ever seen. Which Simon imagined.